Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Our goal today is to have a better show than the...
Oh, the Yankees. Joe and his Yankees and everything. Man. I hurt my back jumping off the bandwagon. It was a crash. I thought they were going to slow down.
I tried to warn you. We're at the All-Star game. I told you. Yeah. Sox, Astros, ALCS.
Yeah. Every once in a while, Nick Wrong is right.
Oh, there you go. You're going with the Mets this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Tim Tebow. Call him up to the majors.
All right, we do have a big show despite the Yankees losing last night. The Eagles are making calls for a new running back. Tom Brady knows he's got to bring his best to beat the Chiefs, but we are starting with the Dallas Cowboys. So yesterday on this program, we discussed whether head coach Jason Garrett is on the hot seat. This morning, the finger points at his quarterback, Dak Prescott, who right now ranks near the bottom of starting QBs in yards, passer rating, and completion percentage. Dallas's record, 2-3. And at least one Hall of Famer and Cowboy legend, Troy Aikman, said Dak needs to be more accurate. In fact, he goes on to say no matter what else he's got, smarts, intelligence, body, height, anything, accuracy is the most important thing. CeCe, how much is Dak hurting the Dallas Cowboys at this point?
Well, this is the thing. And I know Dallas fans, they think it's only them. But if you're a fan of a team, I'll take Cam Newton. Cam Newton has reached the pinnacle as far as being an MVP, and he gets criticized all the time, you know, for how he plays quarterback, and he gets criticized for his accuracy. So I can understand what Troy's talking about. In this era that we're talking about as far as the expectations for quarterbacks, they're a lot higher. And the reason why is because there's so many guys that are competent as far as throwing the football now, more than we've ever seen. I think we're in the golden age of quarterbacks. And people say, yeah, top to bottom, we have more guys that can throw at an NFL level than we've ever had. So the expectations for the guys playing the positions, these guys are getting quarterback coaches at a younger age. So we even see Tom Brady, Drew Brees. Drew Brees talked to me a couple weeks ago about working with his quarterback coach. After 17 years in the NFL, yeah, Drew Brees and the best of the best are doing that. So I can expect Troy to say, yes, he should be more accurate. But it has a lot to do with what people aren't looking at. Because if you look at Dak, you look at his size, look at his arm strength, you think, wow, this guy should be a great thrower of the ball. But he doesn't have two things that you need in being a great passer. He doesn't have great anticipation. That means he will not throw the ball out there early to trust where the wide receivers are going to be, and that's what most of the great quarterbacks have. And he does not have great footwork. And what you see, sometimes it looks like guys who are antsy in the pocket, but now most of the quarterbacks, their feet are always moving. And if you watch Dak, his feet get still, they get parallel a lot in the pocket. And when you don't see that pitter-patter like Drew Brees, those are the things that lead to you being inaccurate. And when sitting down talking to Drew Brees 2 weeks ago, he told me, Chris, one thing that makes me accurate is I know where everyone is supposed to be. So I'm not guessing. I know where my check down and outlet is always. And every protection, I know the weakness. So if they send someone into a zone that I know it's a weak zone, I know immediately where I must go with the football. So there's so many other things that it takes for a quarterback to be accurate. And one is being familiar with the offense. Number two is their footwork. You know, so I don't see Dak improving in year number three the way I thought he was going to improve.
Quick follow-up. The anticipation, is that just an innate quality that you have, the ability to, once you start playing quarterback, you know that? Or is that something that comes with time and experience?
This is the thing. Certain guys are gifted with it. Like, they know they'll just throw into that window, trust in the wide receiver. They have it. Other guys have to learn to be able to trust what they're doing, trust their ability, trust the offense, and that skill is developed over a long period of time. But, yes, certain people have the gift, and then other people, it's a learned skill.
The Cowboys are 30th in scoring this year. The only teams behind them are the Cardinals and Bills. Both of those teams have made a quarterback change already. Now, those teams also drafted their quarterback of the future, so they were ready to make that change. But so there is – everyone deserves some blame here when you are 30th in a league of 32 teams in scoring. So I want to look at the other side of it, which is – in the last 20 years, the best teams at scoring the football, what did they all have in common? Whether it's the 98 Vikings, whether it's the 99 Rams, the 07 Pats, couple years ago, the 2016 Atlanta Falcons, they had excellent schematics. Well, there's Brian Billick with you guys, Mike Martz, Kyle Shanahan with the Falcons. Either a Hall of Fame quarterback or a quarterback playing at an MVP level, Randy, Warner, Shanahan, and
Brian Billick, we thought when we started the game, we had at least 10 to 14 points just scheming. Like, right. They're going to play this coverage. We're going to run this. Now, we might get this ball in the red zone. Do we kick a field goal? Do we score touchdowns? But 10 to 14 points every game.
So they all had an enormous schematic advantage before the game started. They all either had a Hall of Fame quarterback or a quarterback that won MVP that year for the level at which he played, and stars at wide receiver. Whether it's you guys, whether it's Ike Bruce, whether it's Randy with the 07 Pats, Julio Jones and company with the 2016 Falcons. The Cowboys have none of the above. The Cowboys have no schematic advantage from Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan. They have a quarterback that is playing at the opposite of an MVP level, and they have no wide receivers. So it is the perfect, just like all those teams were the perfect storm for, we're going to score 400 plus points. We're going to be a dominant offense, or 500 plus points.
Right now with the
it's
Cowboys.
The opposite. It's none of the boxes are checked. Because you know what those teams don't have in common? It's not like we're like, oh, yeah, and they had this superstar running back. Some of them did. The 99 Rams did, but the 07 Pats did not. The 2016 Falcons did not. Some of them had good offensive lines. Some of them had mediocre offensive lines. The things the Cowboys are great at aren't correlated with historically good offenses. The things they're bad at, being bad at all three, they are correlated with really bad offenses.
If you look at Dallas's offense, and let's compare it to, because they have Zeke and they have that offensive line, let's look at them compared to the Rams, who have Todd Gurley, and L. Bell in Pittsburgh. Those other offenses are, their number one formation is three wide receivers and one back.
Yep.
They spread the field. Both of those guys, Kansas City. They do motion sideways. Dallas, they're very predictable. And when you play the type of football that becomes very predictable, it becomes harder on the quarterback. So it's a combination of how they're going to play and him advancing and knowing more about the game of football, knowing where the weak spots are in that offense. Those are the things that help quarterbacks develop and become more accurate throwing the football.
If you take out Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees, maybe Matt Ryan from a couple years ago. How much of this is because he's not that accurate, and how much of this is because he doesn't have anyone to throw to? There are some quarterbacks, even without weapons like Tom Brady, are still going to come out there and light it up. But he isn't having that year, and he doesn't seem to have anyone to throw to.
Well, that, like, so San Francisco this year, they have problems at quarterback because C.J. Beathard's their starting quarterback. They don't have great wide receivers, yet they're exactly league average in points scored. Indy has problems at wide receiver, but they are right around league average, exactly at league average, because Andrew Luck can make it happen, and I think schematically they do have an edge with Frank Reich. Like, the Cowboys, if we're cutting this up into a pie, I would say 25% on the wide receivers, 35% on the coaching, and 40% on the quarterback. Like, he gets the plurality of the blame, but not the entirety of the blame.
There is such a sense of relief when quarterbacks have wide receivers that either can make plays that aren't drawn up by the coaches, or they have a catch radius that's very, very friendly. And that's one thing that Jason Witten and Dez Bryant gave to Dak early in his career. Like, you can throw the ball close to these guys, and their catch radius being so big, it's very comforting for a young player. So when you're talking about, I knew sometimes I didn't have the best quarterbacks, but I put the pressure on myself, because if I could make a great catch, even in warm-up sometime, Brad Johnson used to say, hey, Chris, how you feeling today? Is the circle this big or is the circle this big? And if you can give that quarterback the comfort, he don't have to be perfect. And you develop that trust, that helps young quarterbacks out also.
And I don't think Troy wants to go out there and highly criticize Dak Prescott, not only because of Troy's being the color analyst on Fox that has a lot of Cowboys games, but also because of, I don't think Troy wants to be highly critical of anyone. He doesn't have to be, particularly the quarterback of the team he quarterbacked for. But he knows what we know. Show Dak's numbers since Zeke's suspension. It's now 13 games. It's one of those blind reveals I like, see? Dak's numbers are slightly better than the quarterbacks on the right. The touchdown interception ratio is almost exactly the same, but he's slightly better than all the quarterback on the right. Show who that is. This quarterback's last 13
always
games.
Always makes me nervous. See?
Brock Osweiler.
Always makes me nervous.
Man, the Texans gave up a second-round pick to have Brock Osweiler off the team.
If you didn't have the Dolphins logo, people at home were like, hey, where's he playing right now?
I swear, I was just going to be like, oh, he plays for the Dolphins now? That's exactly
and,
it.
And I want to give credit. Point. CBS Sports tweeted out this comparison. I thought it was great, so I wanted to bring it to television. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones that made me think of it, and or they're the ones that actually came up with it, I should say. But that is, you don't want to be in that conversation. You don't want to be in the comparative to Brock Osweiler conversation in anything quarterbacking aside from height. And so that is the world in which Dak exists right now. Yeah, part of it's Allen Hurns, part of it's Scott Linehan, part of it's Jason Garrett. But when we are going to be discussing whether or not they should extend him, whether or not he's going to go from $700,000 to over $17 million, then you have to look at things like that and have enormous pause.
I was going to say the same thing. If he was having a great year, that's what we'd be talking about. Oh, the Cowboys are going to get ready. Their contract is coming up. And because he isn't having a great year, I think everything is sort of up in a state of flux. All right, got to take a break. Coming up, could the Eagles be going after L. Bell before the trade deadline? That's next. This is First Things First. Moving on to the Eagles.
My radio show, I got this great source, an unnamed NFL Hall of Famer that I talk to quite often. Gives me some good takes.
Eagles, they just lost Jay Ajayi for the season with a torn ACL. The team reportedly called the Bills about LeSean McCoy's availability. McCoy at age 30 coming off his best game of the season with 108 yards from scrimmage. Also, despite the rumors, reports have surfaced the Eagles will not try to trade for Le'Veon Bell. All right, Nick. Do the Eagles need to trade for a star running back at this point?
Need might be too strong, but I definitely would. I would definitely call up Philly. I'm sorry. I would call up Buffalo, and I would call up Pittsburgh. And I would tell both of them, hey, I've made this offer to two teams, whoever takes it first. The second-round pick I got from Baltimore. In fact, you guys can choose. Do you think Baltimore is going to be worse or better than the Eagles this year? Mm-hmm. Either the Eagles' own second-round pick or Baltimore's second-round pick, which they have, whichever you'd prefer. You can have for Le'Veon Bell or for LeSean McCoy, your choice. Because I think it gives them two benefits. One, it takes a little bit of the burden off Carson Wentz's shoulders. Carson Wentz is still just 10 months removed from an ACL surgery. And I know you've been adamant that an ACL injury is not what it used to be. Guys do fully recover from it. But typically, it's at least a year for them to fully recover from it. And the mental burden of feeling like you have to carry your team. And the other thing I think it would do is if Coach Peterson's right and there is a bit of a Super Bowl hangover, that's a jolt to the locker room. Guys, this is how serious we take the situation we're in. Mm. We are trading away a pick for potentially just a rental, for potentially just a half season of Le'Veon Bell or maybe a season and a half of LeSean McCoy. For both of those reasons, I would make those phone calls. I would try to acquire one of these two players.
Is there a third reason that maybe Howard Roseman looks at the opportunity the Eagles have right now? Is this window kind of closing where Carson Wentz is on his deal? The fact that they've got the pieces in place now and they're sort of teetering a little bit. Make the push now. Get one of these guys in there and help jolt this offense.
Well, I think that Philadelphia and Howie Roseman, they're in a, I mean, they like to protect their position long term. I mean, they've signed some guys to some good contracts that long term that they're going to have to look at before Carson Wentz. But, I mean, when they made the trade last year, they weren't world champions. They were just trying to be one of the best teams in the NFL.
For JJ.
Yes. And they made that trade. We weren't like it's an all-out panic. So we just should assume that Howie Roseman and Philadelphia, they're going to be active participants because last year offseason, they were active in getting guys. Alodi Nada, getting Michael Bennett, getting him over from Seattle. So these are just like trades. You know, when you acquire veteran players who either have some Super Bowl experience or like Alodi Nada, that's the last thing missing from their resume. I think Philadelphia should call for Shady McCoy because the way the league is now, a running back like Shady McCoy is so valuable. He's the leading rusher in Philadelphia Eagles football history. He's their all-time leading rusher, and his ability to play three downs out of the backfield, he's so underrated as a football player. Now, you're talking about a guy that will be ready day number one for Philadelphia, and you got 11 games left in the regular season for him, like, he would be prime time for the playoffs. So I can understand why they would do it and do it. It wouldn't be I'm all in this year. I believe Philadelphia has the type of talent that year after year, if they want to compete, you got to look at picking up guys like Shady.
And even before Jay Ajayi got hurt, the Eagles clearly thought they might make a substantial move because they borrowed from Peter to pay Paul this past Friday. And by that, I mean they had Fletcher Cox restructure his deal. He didn't take any type of pay cut, but they took salary cap space they would have in the future and used that to clear up $6 million this year. There ain't no free agent they're going to spend that $6 million on. They're not carving that out for Dez Bryant. Like, yeah. Why did you clear up cap space in this year's cap unless you thought we might add a substantial player, an expensive player, to this year's team?
Tell me the difference between getting LeSean McCoy and getting Le'Veon Bell. Financially, does it work? Sort of, can they afford both? Would they go after both? Look, McCoy has another year left on his deal. So
Le'Veon would just be the rental. Le'Veon would
just
be more
year.
Expensive, but it would be over after this season. Le'Veon, I believe, is a better player. But Le'Veon would not be ready as quickly as McCoy. Your point that McCoy would be hit the ground running. He's been playing.
All the offseason workouts, he's been there. All the training camp. Now, he's got some controversial things surrounding him. Yes. But he hasn't missed any time in being there. Even though he did have a couple little injuries. Like, he is ready to play football now. And if you're doing a one-year rental, I would much rather have Shady. Because Shady's going to be ready when he comes in. And L. Bell, the messages that he sent out there, I don't know how many carries. Like, how committed is he to the Philadelphia team, who he's got no equity with, when he wasn't committed to the Pittsburgh Steelers? So that would concern me.
Is this the kind of thing that happens fast?
Well, I mean, it would have to happen by the end of Week 8. Like, by the Monday after Week 8's the trade deadline, we are now approaching weeks. Week 6 starts tomorrow, so it would have to happen in the next 20 days or so.
All right, I want to turn to a slightly somber story. Former NFL player George Taliaferro died Monday night at age 91. He was a three-time All-American at Indiana, leading the Hoosiers in rushing twice, passing once, and punting once. And in 1949, he became the first African-American drafted by an NFL team. He was a three-time Pro Bowler in his six seasons in the NFL, playing seven different positions, including quarterback, defensive back, and kicker. And CeCe, I know he meant a lot to you and your family. Give us a little perspective on George Taliaferro.
We called him Papa T. And my brother Butch, when he decided to go to Indiana, was one of the best players in the United States out of high school. Papa T was kind of his mentor, and the university put them together and felt as if there would be some type of bond or connection. And with my mom at the time, my mom had seven kids, my brother was working in the summer, working odd jobs, and he would, you know, give my mom his paycheck. You know, so when he went away to college, not only did we lose, like, the father figure in our home, but we lost one of the breadwinners, part of the salary that we were dependent on. So my brother was always constantly worried. And the reason why we as a family didn't worry, because Papa T had taken care of my brother. And when my mom would travel with family members, they would cook food, they would stay at their house. And we couldn't afford a hotel. We couldn't afford all those meals and everything. So he made my family feel comfortable in Bloomington, Indiana. And that's the way he's been at Indiana. He's the one that tried to stop segregation and brought, you know, the integration to that campus there in Bloomington. And not only being a great athlete, but he really taught me and my brothers about being an African-American role model and what it really meant and the overall responsibilities and the ability to take advantage of an education through your athletics. So Papa T will be missed, not only by me and my family, but by many others. This is a guy who truly was a trailblazer and set a great example for who you should be and how you should act on a regular basis. So he knew at a young age, too, that I love football. And he always told my brother that I wasn't going to play basketball. And he had a tremendous impact on me at a young age. And now when you have shows like this, we don't typically cover deaths, but someone who's had a personal impact on someone like that on the show is the reason why I want to pay a proper amount of respect to him and his family. Truly, truly a great man we lost.
And someone who is, even if for some people a little forgotten to history, an American sports icon. And when you said trailblazer, when he went to the University of Indiana, that was before Jackie Robinson had broke the color barrier in baseball.
Yes. When,
and so, I mean, he was not only the first African-American drafted in the NFL, but the first, I mean, what he did at Indiana. And then I didn't know until last night the relationship your family had with Mr. Taliaferro, and I think it's, I'm glad we got it on the show, and I'm glad you brought it up. This is a really, really great man.
Yeah, we see a lot of kids go to college on all these scholarships, and you take them out of the environment they're in, and you really don't know what's going to happen. But these universities have great people like George Taliaferro were ever to show me and my family kind of a roadmap to kind of be successful and to be successful in college and to be able to carry that throughout our life. So, man, we owe a great deed to him to be able to honor his life and his living by the way that we live. So, Papa T, from me and my family, to you and yours, thank you for all you did for the Carter family.
Nice words, Susan. All right, we've got to take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. On Saturday, Minnesota gunning for a huge upset when they take on number 3 Ohio State. It all starts at noon Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Is it possible, CeCe?
That Minnesota upsets them?
Yeah.
No.
They may annoy him.
No.
Won't upset him.
No.
So just so I'm clear, no.
No. Minnesota can't win that game.
We are.
There's about a 15% chance, Jenna.
Oh, wow.
15%.
Okay. All right.
Oh, who's this?
This, in our viral segment,
Baby
is
Otto.
Antonio Brown Jr. posted his 4-year-old son, Otto, leaving defenders in the dust in his flag football game.
I don't
Bam.
Know. I don't
Great
know
haircut.
What he's going to be doing later, but it's going to be something, and I'm cute. Like,
on this clip, where's he going?
Oh, he's weaving in the aisle. He's going downtown. I like the little sizzle at the end. He with the dad. See, Jenna, you can't teach people swag. Watch the little man at the end. You see that? Spike it. Oh, yeah. Like, he's got it.
This is
You know
awesome.
It when you see it?
How come you told me you can't teach swag?
Because you're the one that needs to learn that.
Well, I was just hoping you might be able to chime in, but by the way you chimed in, the people would know that Jenna's the one with no swag. Like, so because you didn't come in, you came in clumsy.
Well, it took me 2 sentences to figure out that I was the one that you were talking about. He is adorable.
He is
adorable.
Man, got some of
He made
dad's
his national
moves.
Debut after the game in the press conference, so we wanted to
Sitting
bring it up.
Sitting on dad's lap.
Yes.
That's it.
That was great.
Time for stories now, brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. The Red Sox beat the Yankees 4-3 last night to advance to the ALCS. We got a bunch of Yankee fans in our studio, so it was a bit of a sad morning. Yankees made it
Don't
interesting,
start throwing stuff.
Scoring 2 runs in the 9th before closer Craig Kimbrell managed to seal the deal. This was close. If you were watching this was bite your fingernails, edge of your seat.
I mean, right
anything
there.
Could happen.
He beats it out.
There
Yankees
it is.
Probably win.
They had to replay that. Boston will take on Houston next. Nick, were you surprised the Yankees lost both games at home?
I mean, not incredibly. I said before the series, Red Sox in 4. There is no shame in this, Yankee fans. You had
no.
an excellent season. There were 2 teams in baseball clearly better than everyone all year, the Red Sox and the Astros. The Astros got to the ALCS in 3 games, took the Red Sox 4. The disappointment for the Yankees in this series probably about Stanton. Stanton didn't have a single RBI or extra base hit the whole series. He comes up in the 9th, men on 1st and 2nd. And Kimbrell looks shaky, and he strikes out. So Stanton, a rough playoff debut for him.
Yeah, but the rest of the Yankees, if you look at these young players the last 2 years, they've achieved up to or beyond their ability.
Yep.
First year with Boone as their new. They'll be ready for it next year. Getting 100 wins this year and losing to the Red Sox, is there's no crime in that.
No shame in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Mets, though, this
like the dusting. NFL now.
On and off.
The Jags signed former All-Pro running back Jamaal Charles. Jacksonville has been decimated at the running back position with injuries to Leonard Fournette and Corey Grant. Charles played 14 games for Denver last season, rushing for less than 300 yards. What do you think, CeCe? Can Charles make an impact on this Jaguars team?
Yeah, he can make an impact, but the Jags got to be a little more creative. You cannot run that same offense with T.J. Yeldon and Jamaal Charles. You got to be able to open it up. Put him into the in the backfield, sometimes with T.J. Yeldon. But, man, you got to put him in space. You got to run him around the outside. He does run effective between the tackles. But he's more versatile than Fournette is. I believe he can give them a boost. This is a good pickup.
It's a good pickup. He's a big play guy. He's one of the NFL's all-time leaders in yards per carry. He's the second. He's still a 1/100th of a yard behind Jim Brown for the most yards per carry in a single season in NFL history. Listen, I inducted this guy into the Port Arthur Hall of Fame. I've been knowing Jamaal Charles. He's one of my favorite athletes ever. I think he has something left. And for a team that needs the ability to be quick strike without Blake Bortles, this gives them a shot for that. This gives them a shot for a guy who can pop a 60-yarder. I'm rooting for Jamaal.
All right, to the NBA now.
Ever since Nick introduced him to the Hall, his career going the other way. You got to pick your friends better, bro.
Looks like Jimmy Butler won't be traded, at least not for now. Reports are Minnesota plans to start the season with Butler on the roster. Nick, you surprised by this?
Man, I'm surprised Thibodeau might have won the battle with the owner. You don't see owners losing battles very often. Thibodeau said he didn't want to trade him. The owner then told all the other owners, oh, he's getting traded.
Yes.
And so, but this could be an interesting turning point. We've seen a number of NBA players execute what is called pre-agency. The year before they're free agents, I want to be out now. If they don't trade him, it could signal that is not as effective for guys as we thought it was.
They got to trade him.
Yeah.
He went back to Minnesota, told him again, hey, listen, I don't want to be here. When a guy like that, you got to get him out. Now, I know they're asking price. They almost had a deal with the Heat. Timberwolves need to make a deal and not have Jimmy Butler on that roster anymore. It is not helping them. They're not able to move forward. And the players on that roster, it's not fair to them.
Moving on to Anthony Davis. He isn't a free agent for 2 years, but that's not stopping anyone. He is reportedly considering his next destination. Shocking. Davis reportedly favors the Lakers, Knicks, 76ers, and Celtics. So everyone good, basically. That's where
and
I want to go play. And the Knicks.
Everyone good and the Knicks.
Nick, should Anthony Davis force his way to the Lakers to team up with LeBron?
All right. Before I answer your question, I apologize. I want to be very clear on this. If I were New Orleans, I would not trade Anthony Davis at any point. I do not care how much he's threatening. He is a generational among generational talents. If you trade him, you will never get a player like him again. And so I do not think you can get fair value. I think they should be stubborn. I don't think they should care what he wants.
What happened to what we said about Jimmy Butler?
Butler's not a generational. Butler's a really good player. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis has the potential to win multiple MVPs this league, maybe starting with this year. So that's first of all. If they are going to move him, I find his destination's interesting. Because what he is saying is, I've been toiling in obscurity. What are the four most prominent franchises historically in the league? Lakers, Celtics, Knicks, Sixers.
Wow.
One of those four. Like, this is threatening me in one of those four because he's also, like you pointed out, the only guy who has said, I'm the best player in the league.
Yes.
I'm not the second best player in the league. Mm-hmm. Put me in a major market. Let me show everyone how good I've been for all these years. Now, to answer your question, of course, if he's available, if you're the Lakers, anyone but LeBron, you take your choice. You would then have the best player in the world and arguably the second best player and arguably third or fourth or fifth best player to go along with him.
I like most of the destinations. I like the fact that they are the prominent organizations. But all the trades that I'm proposing, it's about balance. I just want some Golden State. They can do whatever they want, but I just want some balance. I want some people that can compete. So all those teams I feel good about except Boston. Don't want him to go to Boston. They already got enough talent. I believe they're building something there special. The people might say, well, Philadelphia, that's, intriguing. But, like, he doesn't want to play center.
Correct.
So he wants to play the four. So that's why he would be on there with Joel Embiid. But I want to see balance. So, the Lakers, that's a great possibility to have someone go against the Warriors and have a legitimate shot.
And the Knicks are on there, interestingly. And he doesn't want to play center. Kristaps is there. Like, he's made this clear, even in New Orleans. One of the reasons he liked having Boogie there. He does not like playing the five. If you have a ton of movement this offseason, if you have Durant going to the Knicks a year from now, then AD trying to go to the Lakers with LeBron makes a lot more sense in that.
Do you run into the same problem where he wants to go prove himself that he could be the best guy? He doesn't need a guy like LeBron to be the best guy? I know he wants to, and he doesn't have a problem
with
it, but is that what we run into?
I think he believes he's going to show the world this year he's the best player in the world.
Well, also, he's gone against the Warriors and realized, yeah, they had a little bit of a chance. Then they had some injuries. So he's coming to the NBA at a different time. He realized you must team up with some people to be able to win, even though he believes in his own ability.
And his frustration level this year might reach its apex because last year they finally had some success. Then Boogie got hurt. And so that got derailed. And this year, they are going to be fighting for a playoff spot. No matter what he does, they are in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range in the Western Conference. And he knows, man, he ain't that young anymore. Came in the league in 2012. This season going to end in 2019. Like, he needs playing some playoff games.
All right, let's get back to the NFL now. 5 games into the season, and I bet you wouldn't have guessed 5 weeks ago who would be leading the league in receptions and be second in yards. It is Vikings receiver Adam Thielen, a bright spot in what's been a frustrating start to the season for Minnesota. Thielen said he models his game after another native Minnesotan, all-time great receiver Larry Fitzgerald.
He's a guy that I grew up following. He's a guy that, I've been around in the off seasons training with him and things like that. And I just know how hard he works and how successful he's been. And I've really tried to emulate what I've done from him.
See, there's almost no one out there that has more respect for his approach and the way he plays and the work and dedication he puts into the game than you do towards Larry Fitzgerald. Is that a good guy to want to emulate in for the most part if you're Adam Thielen?
Absolutely. And Larry has been one of the most giving. I'm talking about his life is open. Adam talks about he has a house about a mile from the Vikings facility. So when Larry gets treated in the offseason, he uses the University of Minnesota, their training facilities, and the Vikings training facility. And he invites, man, all kinds of players. Through the years, he's had hundreds of quarterbacks, wide receivers, different positions, coaches, NFL players, former players, Hall of Famers. Like, he brings all these people there so that he can learn. And Adam has been there. So he's invited Adam. Adam has been able to see it. Larry is a great role model, especially if you've grown up in the state. I mean, how many guys can you look to say, hey, I want to grow up like this guy? Larry Fitzgerald, born and raised in Minneapolis.
That's what I was just going to say.
Born and raised in Minneapolis, probably the most famous football player ever in the state's history. Yeah, he's a great person. And off the field, I know this through people who work with the Vikings. I know this because my daughter works there for their foundation. Adam Thielen's just like Larry Fitzgerald, very, very giving, very organization conscious, very, very community driven, family guy. So, yeah, he's doing all the right thing. Sometimes you hear these stories and we know being behind the scenes, being like, that's all not true. But Adam Thielen, it is a fairy tale. Great kid. No one wanted him in the NFL. No one thought he could ever play in the NFL. Scholarship offer, he had one, $500.
To Mankato State.
Yeah, that's not even an offer. That's just basically to do the paperwork. The money that it costs to do your paperwork to get you registered, we're going to front that to you. So tremendous story there with the Vikings, with the state of Minnesota, and Larry Fitzgerald's one of the best stories that the state's ever had.
And I'm glad you emphasized that Larry's from there. Larry's dad is one of the most famous journalists for black newspapers in America and has been in Minneapolis forever. That's how you knew him since he was very young. Like, so people hear Larry, they're like, Pitt, and then Arizona, but the connection is he grew up in Minneapolis. And so we've heard Adam Thielen on this show talking about when he was a little kid looking up to you, but Larry Fitzgerald is more of someone he can touch and feel, like someone
Absolutely.
He's played against, someone he can measure himself against.
And someone that Larry has pulled him in to his little group and spent personal time with him.
And Adam Thielen's story is, you talked about it, but just making the NFL for Adam Thielen makes it a 1 in a 10 million story. But him becoming an all-pro caliber player, last year having 1,300 yards, this year being on pace for 1,900 receiving yards, breaking the all-time NFL record for 100-yard games to start a season.
Crazy.
And it's a story for young athletes or young people almost anywhere to say, hey, man, don't put a ceiling on what your dreams were. You know what I mean? Like I'm sure he wanted to play D1 football. That door was closed. He still didn't close his NFL dream. I want to be drafted. That door is closed. Still didn't close his NFL dream. And now he's legitimately in the discussion as one of the best wide receivers in football. And it's not even a discussion. He is one of the most productive wide receivers in football.
For people that don't get a chance to always watch the Vikings play, who does his game remind you of? Is it Larry Fitzgerald? Is there someone else that he models his receiving game after?
It's hard to say Larry, but I can take things from Larry's game. He's a great route runner. He's a student of the game. He is very good at contested. But Larry is such a better athlete. Larry plays in the air as good as any wide receiver that's ever played. Also, Larry has them playoff games that, man, Larry goes off. You get Larry Fitzgerald in the playoff game, and he has shown the reason why he's been one of the greats. So the route running, the contested, the being a student of the game, all those things, loving football. Him and Stephon Diggs have a tremendous relationship, too. So not being a selfish, diva, high-maintenance wide receiver, those are all things that he grabbed from Larry Fitzgerald.
Thielen is, you said it, one of the best in the league contested catches. Fitzgerald has arguably the best hands ever. It's on the very short list.
Yes.
Like, and so that is something almost nobody in the league, not Odell, not AB, like, can compare as far as their ability to be sure-handed at all times. You could put Larry against any player in the history of the league, but Larry's story makes sense. Like, Larry was a blue-chip prospect.
Oh,
Larry
was the best wide receiver in his high school class.
Right, was dominant at Pitt. I was in college when Larry was going to Syracuse, and I watched him beat Syracuse over the head every year when he was at Pitt. Mm-hmm. Was a first-round pick, a high first-round pick.
He followed the script. Thielen didn't.
Thielen followed almost a script unlike any guy that's reached this level at that position. That I like, Antonio Brown's unexpected because he wasn't a first-round pick, but he was still blue-chip throughout. Like, Thielen's thing's unbelievable.
The one thing Thielen will always have over Larry, and Larry's done great things in Arizona. The Bidwell family's been great to him. He's great in that community. But Thielen is the star for Larry's team. No matter what Larry accomplishes, man, that experience he had as a kid growing up being a ball boy, the Minnesota Vikings is his team. And the star for that team is another Minnesota guy.
Yeah.
So regardless of what Larry, like, what he accomplishes, Thielen will always have that one up on him.
It's a fun story. It's a great story. Thanks. Coming up, how concerned should the Pats be with the 5-0 Kansas City Chiefs? We will break that down next on First Things First. No. Back here, First Things First, Super Bowl champ and, sadly, Yankee fan Chris Caney is here.
Oh.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry, what?
I blame Nick Wright.
Oh, because you got his
radio show last night.
Yeah.
And he told me, you know it's over for the Yankees. After
I was trying to emotionally prepare you. I was the doctor. I pulled you into the lobby and I said, sir.
I'm talking to Nick at 7:30. He said, you know it's over for your Yankees. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why does he have to be a bad guy?
I'm not a bad guy.
You are a bad guy.
I ask myself that every day.
I'm just accurate.
All right.
He's a monster on that radio, I'm telling you. Yelling at people and everything.
Got all kinds of sources, see?
He's a bully on the radio. He's a bully on the radio.
Yeah, well, invite me on your radio show and you can bully me back. I've known you for a year and a half. Ain't happened once.
Of all the must-see games on the NFL schedule this weekend, there is one must-see and cannot be interrupted for any reason game that should grab your attention. Patrick Mahomes and the undefeated Chiefs heading to New England to face the red-hot Patriots. And while Tom Brady has historically dominated opponents in Foxborough, he acknowledged the Chiefs pose an interesting challenge.
When we're playing a team like Kansas City, you know, we got to take advantage of every scoring opportunity because, you know, they are. You know, they've proven over 5 weeks that they can distribute the ball, and the guys who they're distributing to are making plays, getting the ball in the end zone. And, you know, we're going to have to match that. There's not a lot of margin for error when you're going against a team that's 5-0.
Look, usually we're asking how much pressure is on the opponent to keep up and match the New England Patriots offense. But now at 5-0, you're asking the opposite. How much pressure is on the New England Patriots offense to keep pace with what we've seen Patrick Mahomes do?
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on the Patriots offense to dictate the complexion of the game. And I think that starts with being able to control time of possession and being able to sustain offensive drives. Now, I'm going to tell you what's going to help the Patriots do that. Having Julian Edelman back, Tom Brady's target in between the numbers on those slot option routes, being able to continue to move the sticks. Also, the emergence of Sony Michel, that running game, that'll be able to control things, keep that offense on schedule. When you look at this Kansas City Chiefs offense, I mean, personnel-wise, schematic-wise, when you look at the X's and O's, Andy Reid does a good job of getting the ball to the guys in positions where they can do what they do best. And so I don't know that defenses are going to be able to put up better performances than what we've seen the last two defenses to face that Chiefs offense do. The Jacksonville Jaguars last week played Pat Mahomes about as good as you can play him, didn't allow him to get his first or second read, whether it was man coverage, whether it was zone coverage. They did a good job of disrupting the timing. They did a good job of matching the receivers when they were in zone coverage. It almost looked like man coverage. But I say all that to say this. That Chiefs offense is going to be tough to stop. So you've got to make sure that you play a ball control offense. The best defense for that Chiefs offense is to keep them
keep
on the sideline.
The field. Denver played a great game against the Chiefs. Chiefs scored 27. The Jags played, I think, an honorable game against the Chiefs. Chiefs scored 30.
23.
Like, 23, well, because of
Chris Jones' interception.
Right. If you pick six. So the offense scored 23. The team got 30 in total. I do not think they're going to be able to hold the Chiefs offense under 24 points. But I still think New England should. They're three-and-a-half-point favorites, and they should be, because it's not only that they have 10 days to prepare. It's not only that the Chiefs are coming off as physical of a game as you can play all year while the Patriots are coming off Thursday against the Colts. It's that the Pats' offense is now fully functional, and the Chiefs' defense has gaping weaknesses, particularly against the pass. They're 32nd-ranked defense. They're 31st against the pass. They're not great against the run, but they're 23rd, 24th against the run. And when you have Edelman back, Gronk's there, Josh Gordon is now getting at least a little bit more of the playbook open up to him, and Sony Michel has shown in back-to-back weeks he's a credible rushing threat. You are going to have Tom Brady the full menu of options. And I'd imagine Tom Brady's going to hurry to the line of scrimmage and then take his time. He's going to hurry the line of scrimmage, maybe put some in motion to see what if the Chiefs are in man or zone, and then say, oh, okay, you're the guy I'm picking on. You're the guy I'm picking on. If the Chiefs don't force turnovers, which is something they've done well this year, but if they don't force turnovers, I don't know how they can hold the Pats under 31, 32, 35. And so that means they'd have to beat them the way they beat the Steelers, 42, 37, something like that.
I think that it will be north of 50 points scored in this game. What becomes important, you guys talk about third down just a little bit. Third down's very important, but the red zone becomes even more important. New England, what they've done in the past is give up a lot of yards between the 30s, between the 20s, and then they tighten up once you get to the red zone. The reason why it becomes more difficult for New England going against a Kansas City offense in the red zone is because they can threaten you from all parts of the offense. They got speed on the outside. They can also run the ball with speed, which only a few teams have. Them, the Rams, and a few other teams run those speed sweeps. They also have the most effective wide receiver is someone who can affect the slot area, and that's a tight end in Kelce. So how much more can Sammy Watkins give them in the red zone? Because they're going to take away one of the wide receivers in the red zone. So I believe it's going to be Kelce. Then you have to have other guys who have to be able to score. When you're in the red zone, you can't settle for field goals against New England. I like Tom Brady, though, because he did give us a little insight, because people think all the time when they're going against other quarterbacks or other offenses that the other team doesn't pay attention. Tom Brady let us know, no, we do pay attention, and there is more pressure on us to be able to generate first downs, to keep the clock moving because of that offense that's out there. Tom Brady understands that. I believe the wild card in this game can be, and we never see it happen on a regular basis. I believe Kansas City has better special teams because of their returns. And if they can generate some field position off the return game, these are the types of things that make a difference in a Sunday night game. Wild card in this, Andy Reid has done well against the Belichick coach defense, even going back to Philadelphia. And this is the most talent that Andy Reid has ever had on one offense. So it's going to be interesting to see on Sunday night what Andy Reid, who has success against Belichick, what he does with the best personnel that he's had against Belichick.
And just real quick, when you mentioned the special teams, you can punt away from Tyreek Hill, but DeAnthony Thomas is waiting right there. Yep. He's a track star as well. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we were talking about this Sunday, watching football together. Like, this is the year of kickers being awful. Just missed kicks, missed extra points. Mm-hmm. Harrison Butker, the Chiefs kicker, has the longest made kick streak in the NFL. So they aren't giving up points in that area either.
And football is not, for years we have told people, it's broken down into three phases. You got to win the offense, the defense, try to win the special team. It's broken to a third. With the new rules in the kicking game's not a third. It's about 10% because most of the plays are negated because you kick it out end zone, the effort. You can just see games have changed now. So now if you have stabilized kicking and you have a decent returner, you can get a huge advantage in NFL games now because it is not split up a third, and a third anymore.
Is there something to be said for, yes, the Chiefs are one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now, with one of the hottest quarterbacks, with a head coach who's not afraid to take chances. But the Patriots are more experienced. They don't get rattled. They don't get flustered, or so the narrative says and states. How much of an advantage is that when it comes to these two teams facing each other?
Well, I think experience matters, and you can just look at the quarterback position, right? You talk about Tom Brady versus Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes is going to inevitably struggle. He struggled a little bit last week. He had the two interceptions, and you see that he's seeing some different defenses, some complex coverages, giving him a little bit of trouble. And defensive coordinators are starting to be a little more aggressive,
yes,
understanding what Andy Reid is trying to do with Pat Mahomes and those skill position players. So you got to believe that Bill Belichick is going to do some of that. And CeCe, I think one of the big areas to focus on is the red zone, like you mentioned earlier, just because it's a condensed area. So you don't have to rely on athleticism and speed as much. Mm-hmm. And we know the Patriots defensively don't have a lot of either of those. So, but I think what Bill Belichick can do is
can
run some track
down
coverages in that red zone, create opportunities for takeaways defensively. And if Tom Brady and that Patriots offense, they're scoring touchdowns, and then they can hold the Kansas City Chiefs offense to field goals, or better yet, even takeaways, I think that can dictate the complexion of this game as well. So that's something to watch, something to keep an eye on.
All right, Chris Kenny, stick around. A segment you are fired up about. Will Odell Beckham's comments have a lingering effect on the Giants? That's next on First.
What about this guy's comments right here? What about Lil Wayne talking about his quarterback? From the Bronx,
your former team is having some in-house issues this week, the New York Giants. Let's refresh and set the table, okay? Odell made some off-putting comments about the Giants' offense and Eli's limitations. Then head coach Pat Shurmur responded, telling the media, talk to Odell. Then Eli Manning said, I don't listen to Lil Wayne much. Real helpful, Eli. Then on Tuesday, the media approached Odell again, and this time Odell struck a different chord.
I think we all understand each other. Like I said, there's nothing that is going to come in between my brothers, my teammates. This is something that is going to pull us closer. And I felt very close as a team this Sunday, and that's the way that we have to play. That's the way that we're going to fight. And nobody in here likes to lose. We're all tired of losing. We want to change that that culture, atmosphere, whatever it is, because this is a place that has a lot of pride, and we want to be able to you know, be proud of what we display and do all those things. So it was a big week for us. We took a big step. We lost on a 63-yard field goal. If I have to lose on a 63-yard field goal, I mean, so be it. Like, it's impressive by that kicker to be able to do that with the game on the line and hit it. So we're taking steps in the right direction.
All right, Chris, give us a peek inside how an NFL locker room works. When someone calls out someone else on the team, how much does that sprinkle to the rest of the players? How much does that carry over from week to week? Is it like he said, are they all on the same page, all's forgiven, they know what his intentions were? Or is this something that's going to sort of manifest itself into something bigger?
Well, here's what I'll say. For a Giants offense that's struggling to find their identity, this certainly didn't help matters. And while there is some truth to some of the criticisms that Odell had for the team in general, the offense specifically, I don't think it does anybody any good to make that public. Like, there was nothing to be gained by having that one-on-one sit-down with Josina Anderson. Like, I mean, and then beyond that, it's so strange having Lil Wayne sit right next to you. Like, I don't even know why he was there. It's not like Lil Wayne can provide some insight into the Giants or something that's going on with the team. So if you have something to say about your teammates, to have somebody like that there at present at the interview didn't make a whole lot of sense. But beyond that, just looking at what he had to say, I feel a way about him not addressing his teammates first before doing that interview. And the way we know that he didn't address his teammates is because he asked Pat Shurmur Saturday night before the game at the hotel if he could talk to the guys about some of the commentary that was leaked before the interview was made public Sunday morning before their game against the Panthers. But in looking at this situation, I don't think that it helps the chemistry in that locker room. And that's been a big issue for this team the last couple of years. Odell Beckham Jr. is somebody that the Giants organization is looking at in a leadership position. He didn't take advantage of his position. He didn't do the right thing by his team.
I just want to make sure it's clear to the audience. Odell didn't call out a host of players. He called out play calling, and he criticized Eli. He said he didn't say anything about the offensive line. He didn't say anything about the defense. He didn't say anything about the other wide receivers. He didn't say anything about Saquon. He criticized the scheme, which is coaching, and the quarterback. Do you disagree?
Nick, I disagree because he did say, as a team, we don't play with heart, we don't play with energy. I bring those things to the table every single game. I play with emotion, but he says our team doesn't play with heart, they don't play with energy. Now, to me, it sounds like he's being critical of all his teammates.
So you felt that that was – go ahead, C.
Well, who's he talking about then?
I thought that the pointed comments were about Eli Manning.
About the heart thing?
We
can't have selective hearing.
Yeah. No.
He said all these things.
Agreed.
And when you say that you're on a team, it's been like, you know, hey, man, we're doing the show. I'm doing my show with some heart and some passion without saying anything about y'all. So it's
implied.
It's implied.
But well, then let me ask you this, because I feel like those are comments we hear in the – like, what about this? We need to be tougher.
Who says that?
We got hear guys every week
No, 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 no. Guys in interviews speak for themselves. If not, they throw themselves involved in it. As a defensive player, you know something, Canty? We need to be tougher this week. You include yourself in
it.
He didn't include himself in it. He said, I play with heart. We don't play with heart. So he removed himself from the group. This is the thing that we must understand. There's different rules in team sports. Certain things, when you say, they imply certain other things. You can't say, I'm your brother, and then soon somebody put a mic in your face, you tell them about, hey, man, you know something? My little brother wets the bed. You know something? My little brother, he eats boogers. You know something?
You can't do
my
that.
Brother, like, you can't do those types of things. Like, you might say that to myself, to my face and everything, but when we go outside, we got to present a united front. Now, I'm a guy that's been in this position that Odell's been in before. I've made a lot of mistakes. I was very, very immature. But along the way, unless I really was honest with myself, that's when I became to grow. Odell's not being honest with himself. Him and his brothers are not on the same page. When they don't have a speaking role, and you have one, and you've said things about your teammates, we're not on the same footing. They didn't get a chance to say anything. They didn't have to get up in front of the team and apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Odell had to get up in front of the team and apologize. So trying to act like we're on equal footing, no. He should be like, you know something? We're trying to work towards something. I made a mistake last week. Take ownership in what you did. And he should regret what he said. He went back and said, no, I don't regret it.
He doubled
That's
down.
Part of being young. I remember making those excuses. I mean, just saying, you know something? I wish I would have done a little bit different. My comments right there weren't measured the right way. They weren't taken out of context. So that's the part that I don't see the growth. But I would like to see young people, when they make mistakes, just fess up to it and then try to move on from
well,
it.
Well, but when you guys say we can't have selective hearing, we do also have to recognize he said after the game, I'm trying to be a leader. I'm learning on the fly. That might not be a full mea culpa, but that is him saying, this wasn't pitch perfect. I didn't do this exactly the way I wanted. The reason I brought up the Eli part is there is amongst Giants fans and amongst the Giants organization, understandable, real loyalty to Eli Manning. But in that locker room, they got one guy that won a Super Bowl with him. Mm. Zach DiAssi. That's it.
It has nothing to do with Super Bowl. When you decide I'm going to play a team sport, you're signing up for a certain number of things. Eli Manning, as being one of the few Walter Payton winners of Man of the Year, he deserves a certain amount of respect just because he's my teammate. Forget what he's accomplished. I'm not going to tell people secrets that we know about the team. You know the reason why? I know the Giants got a book on Odell. The NFL got a book on Odell.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants don't go to the streets and tell people everything about Odell. But there's stuff I know that I know the Giants know. They don't say nothing in the press conference. They put on a good face because they've been doing this for a long time. Odell, there's guys that have made mistakes a long time. But fessing up to your mistakes and trying to grow and move on, those are the things that you want to see. When I was young, man, I made a lot of mistakes. When I was doing an interview as a 25-year-old compared to when I was 35, was totally different. And that's what we should expect from Odell. But if he's not willing to look at it and be like, yeah, I made a mistake. Him mentioning this quarterback was a mistake. Him talking about the offensive play selection, that was a mistake. And it's a mistake if he doesn't recognize that it's a mistake.
Well, here's the thing that I have an issue with, CC. He knew that Eli Manning was going to be the quarterback when he signed that contract. He knew that Pat Shurmur was going to be the play caller when he signed that contract. So, in essence, this is what you signed up for, to be a part of this. So, all of a sudden, after you get the financial security, to turn around and say you haven't an issue with these facets of the team? Like, this is something that you could have avoided. You didn't have to commit long-term to this organization knowing that those two figures would play a key role in it for the foreseeable future. But he did that. So if you accepted that responsibility by signing the contract, then you have to accept everything that comes along with it. And the fact is, you're a leader in that locker room, whether you like it or not. And if you're trying to lead, there are just certain things that you cannot do. You cannot air out the business of the team. You have to look at every opportunity when you talk to the media as a chance to address your teammates and set the agenda for the team moving forward. With the offense having to be the catalyst for how this Giants team is going to have success this year, you've got to help that group find an identity. Right. But being able to do this interview, doing this and putting this out there, just creates another distraction that your coaching staff and your teammates have to deal with. And that's the thing that I have a problem with.
Especially in a short week, because the Giants and the Eagles are going to play Thursday night, and a lot of that will come to a head.
So good luck.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.